Yeah, turn it down a little. Welcome. Welcome, everyone, to Dark Horse Live, episode 104. We're going to confessional straight off the bat. I haven't been here in a minute, so yeah, first confession. I was wrong about LEDs. I was wrong. I held on to the CMH game way too fucking long. We just pulled our first crop with the new Grower's Choice LED. It is fucking banging. It looks 1,000 times better. Way bigger yield. LEDs is the way. I was wrong. I confess. Next confession. I'm fucking behind on sending free shit. I haven't sent free shit for like 2 shows. So I'm sorry. I will get it to you. If you got an email that says you won, I haven't even gotten back to it yet. But yes, if you've won shit in the last 2 shows, I will make sure you get it. I am behind. I am sorry. Okay. Enough confessions. All right, let's go to TH Caesar strain of the week. Where's my button? There it is. Oh, man. Sorry about your eardrums.
Epic entry.
That was a mistake. All right, take it away, Cease.
All right, so this one right here is Really Canerato's GMO to Zots. It didn't have a name when I originally got it, so I decided to call it Zazots. The number 2 was the one that yields like GMO, but the number 3 was the one that had like the interesting terp profile. This one had the GMO muddled mint lime margarita sherbet thing going on. Very unique terp profile. It's definitely heavy on the GMO and the King Louis side of the traits. Before I even get into that, the Zots is Skittles to Gelati King Louis. So the number 3 is definitely going to be heavier on the GMO and the King Louis traits. You get some of the Gelati terps in the background, but like absolutely no Skittles. It's definitely a washer. Throws out a bunch of resin, really chunky. If anything, not many people have this. I'd say probably very few people have this exact cut right here. But if you are in Colorado and you'd like to check it out, we will be dropping some at a dispensary pretty soon. So definitely make sure you follow up with us on where we're dropping this flavor at.
Does this shit wash?
It definitely washes.
Looks like it washes. Do you know what percent?
When these people that should remain nameless got it washed for us, they came back with the test wash. And this is, mind you, we weren't growing at all for washing or anything like that based off of the lights and all that. It washed over 4%.
That'll work.
So it definitely would do better now.
All right. So, I don't know, real quick, I wanted to chat it up with you. I didn't tell you we were going to do this, but how are you feeling? You want to talk about your weird vertigo?
Oh, man. So, yeah, I was kind of behind in the middle of, what was it? Friday night into Saturday. Never in my life have I woke up with vertigo, or I didn't know what the hell was going on. I pretty much thought the worst. I thought I tested positive for COVID, and that shit woke me up in the middle of the night, and I wanted to get a test right then and there. Had no idea what the hell was going on, but in the middle of sleeping, just turning, like, the dizziness, just the movement just completely fucking got me nauseous. So it's hard for me to fall back asleep. I woke up, took me about like 3 hours to get out of bed. I thought I had the fucking COVID. but it took a test again, negative. So I'm like, it can't be COVID. I don't know what the fuck is going on. But just the disorientation and the dizziness from the fucking the vertigo was fucking with me so hard. Yesterday, it was kind of getting like to me a little bit, but today I feel fine. So it was only like 3 days of me being down.
You're back to normal?
I'm back to normal now.
That was weird. Yeah, he hit me up and he's like, dude, I can't. Every time I stand up and look left, I want to like pass out. I'm like, what the fuck?
It's weird because, yeah, if I laid back and looked to the left, that triggered my vertigo and the whole room just started shifting. So I was like, oh god, like it was just fucking bad.
You're kind of falling apart. Last episode we were talking about you coughing up blood. This episode you're fucking dizzy when you stand up and look left. Like, I don't know, man. Fucking age isn't...
It's not age. I don't get old. I don't age.
All right. So tonight on the show, Jeremy from Build a Soil, a very requested guest. That's a horrible sentence. A very highly anticipated guest. A lot of requests for Jeremy. So yeah, Jeremy is a super smart dude. Build a Soil is a company that we've seen grow over time into like a... I would say it's a pretty fucking big company now. And all of the OGs are mixing their own soils based off kind of what Jeremy offers. But yeah, Build a Soil, their YouTube channel just crossed 100,000 subs. So everyone, I put a link in the description. Go check out Build a Soil's channel. Like I said, I think I say it on the interview, but it's just like, he's doing what I wanted to do 1,000 times better than I could ever do it. I thought, well, let's put some shorts out talking about how to clone, harvest, whatever, transplant. But Jeremy's covered it in way better detail. His channel is amazing. You should go check it out. But without further ado, let's just bring Jeremy onto the show. And yeah, this is a big interview for us, I feel like. So enjoy this one. And thanks again, Jeremy, for making time for us. But here we go. Build a Soil. All right, everybody. We're here with Jeremy from Build a Soil, probably one of the most requested guests that we've ever had. So thank you for coming on the program, man. I know everyone is stoked that you're here.
Hell yeah. Thanks for having me on, man. Appreciate it. This is awesome.
Absolutely. So I'm not sure if you've seen too many of the shows, but we generally start with like a little intro to you personally. We're going to talk cannabis here, but what is that noise? Oh, it's a fire engine. Truck. Okay, sorry. But yeah, we're going to talk plants and cannabis here, but let's start first with a little bit about who you are, and we kind of ask people to tell us maybe the first time that they smoked cannabis or their first introduction to cannabis, if you can recall that far back.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. So, sorry, I haven't really shared. A little bit about me. Started Build a Soil almost 10 years ago as a idea to do something that I cared about instead of just another job. Started in my garage, and it's evolved into a company. And as far as cannabis goes, I grew up in a cul-de-sac, so growing plants wasn't, you know, a normal thing. It seemed like magic to me when I would see someone put a seed and they were able to successfully harvest something. And I think combining all that, you'd hear stories for me in college of buddies like, man, I tried to grow once, but I couldn't get the plant to live, or, you know, whatever stupid story you hear when somebody didn't really try. So it seemed elusive. But when I first started using cannabis, it took a couple tries. And after that, it's pretty much like a lifetime thing. And so within a couple of years, I'm thinking, how do I grow this instead of buy it, right? But first experience, I actually didn't start drinking or smoking until a little bit later compared to most people that I know. And towards the end of high school, I was getting a little bit more comfortable with my friends and going out instead of just kind of being the surfing or just do what I normally do. And I had a party and I wasn't supposed to. My parents were out of town. It was a rager, ton of people at my house. Totally shouldn't have done it. And it ended up a pretty good story. Nothing really bad happened, but I was under enough liquid courage at that point to reach over into the circle and say, give me that. And I just grabbed the J out of the circle and started ripping on it. And man, I didn't smoke cigarettes, anything. So I didn't have like a experience that would say, hey, I got high. That night, I don't really call my first time, but that was my first time. And I vividly remember later on eating snacks in the kitchen going, man, my throat kind of hurts a little. This is weird. Cause I'd never smoked, right? So it was kind of burning a little bit. And that was kind of the beginning. I was feeling more confident. I think at that point to try new things without it being like a scary deal. I never really started getting close to cannabis until I had a roommate in college that was a lot more seasoned than I. And so he'd break out his bong and kind of introduce me to the whole story. And then it was always like a communal thing. Like we'd go to a buddy's house, bust it out, share together, go down the street. Hey, what you got? What do you have? And so I think I just got into that. And I remember the first time thinking, you guys do this all day. How do you function? Right. And now that it's so far beyond that, it's definitely a part of my routine. So, yeah, man, good question. I haven't thought about that in a long time.
Do you recall the first like strain that was big that you smoked, or like one of your early favorite strains back when you were smoking with the boys back then? Was there a standout strain that you guys would kind of go bananas over?
So strains weren't a thing when I was smoking for a while. And I remember asking my dealer, hey, can you get some purple stuff or anything like that? He's like, bro, that shit doesn't exist. Or like, nah, don't get your hopes up. You know, it's just herb. I was blessed in the sense that everything that I smoked was, I grew up in Southern California. I didn't know what brick was. I didn't know what stress was. I just didn't have any bad weed. Now, it wasn't great, but looking back what I've seen when I moved to Colorado, I'm like, oh, that's brick. Holy shit. No, I had chronic every single time. Everybody that was into it was always getting, you know, something pretty good. But it was all very similar. It was like just outdoor Cali-O or whatever it was, kind of orange haired, just dank. And eventually where it started to change for me was I heard rumors that a couple of my friends got their license to get medical. And I was thinking, well, I was taught in school that the supremacy clause trumps all that. And that's bullshit. You can't get a, you know, federally illegal thing just because the state says so. Well, I was very wrong. And my buddy comes over and he uses his new license to have like peanut butter delivered and all sorts of shit. So I was in real estate at the time. And I was scared that maybe I'd get in trouble for using cannabis at some point, that could affect my career. So I was like, screw that, I'm going to go get my license. Went and got my license. And in California, stress was all you really needed. Didn't have to be pain or anything. And I told him, dude, I'm stressed, I'm going to get in trouble for this. And so I got my license. And walking into the dispensary, I went to as many as I could to just try and see the difference. And man, back then, you'd be there and all of a sudden some dreadhead would walk in with a backpack, open it up, they'd put their big swivel like glass on it to look at it, and they would just take him back and pay him cash. And so most of the good stuff was coming from NorCal at that time, driving down to Southern California. And it was all about just OG Kush crosses, Fire Kush, like anything that kind of had that name in it was selling big at the time. But for me, what was interesting was the first time when I went to the dispensary that I could experience in one sitting, total, like the first one that I smoked that had that real candy, sweet terp that we all know is kind of hazy, I think as a lot of people describe it, was a Snowcap cross. And then next to that, I had some Fire Kush, and I remember thinking, oh my God, I love having these opposites. Mm-hmm. So right at that time, I want to say 2004 to that, I can't remember the years, but that was the time where I was in California and I could go get, and I could actually see what strains were named and all of that. It wasn't until 2009 when I moved to Colorado. I'd played around with growing a little bit before then. I had a buddy that grew. His first couple of rounds, we learned like, oh crap, mites and all these things. But when I moved here and I just didn't know anybody, that's when I went all in and started ordering seeds online, having all my first experiences. And a lot of those are embarrassingly documented still on ICMEC. I did like a advanced nutrients versus Lucas method. And I tried just all sorts of stuff, deep water culture. And but strain wise, I didn't have a name strain. It was more just about the OG Kushes. That was like the pinnacle at that point, anything that had Kush in it. And I think that still stuck with me. I really liked the fuel. You know, I just didn't really know what it was at that point.
You seem to have a bit of like a science background. It's interesting you say you kind of started from real estate. Well, if you don't mind me asking, what was your like course of study in college? Were you like marketing?
No science.
Were you some science-based? I kind of knew it, yeah.
Yeah, no science.
Oh, no science. Oh, shit.
No, I think my biggest skill in life has been self-educating and the passion to learn, a desire to know more. But biology was boring to me. Had they told me I could grow, I probably would have been fascinated by it. So I feel like I've experienced what a lot of us do when you get a little bit older. I was 29 when I started BuildASoil. I'll be 39 this year. I was at the point where I was really fascinated and felt like maybe I'd missed out on some of the schooling. But then when I was considering actually going to college for some of this, because I was starting BuildASoil, most of the courses weren't really in line with the organic side. It was more like go to take a permaculture course, right? Or a compost course. And so I just started devouring. I mean, right now on Audible, I go through probably two business books or personal development books every week or two. I have a drive to work. I consume a lot. But before that, it was always reading, and I would just read every book you can imagine. I would get all the old like biological ionization and just ancient textbooks. And I would just dig in, and I was able to find through sifting through it that there was a lot of correlation of the good nuggets of info that were similar across all these different educators. And then there was some certain things that were unique to farming. And so I feel like a lot of our leg up here at BuildASoil has been that we have learned what makes it work. And part of that was taking recipes that were passed down through the forums. And for the first time saying, let's analyze these at the lab and see what it looks like. And then from there, how do we improve the numbers they say to improve? And then does that translate? And one of the things that caused a delay in understanding this was that many of the agricultural results that they teach you in a textbook, you could grow some fire cannabis out of it and they would say it's impossible. So it was clear there was a disconnect in what was too much nutrients or what wasn't enough in comparison from the field to the potting soil. And at the point I started BuildASoil, I didn't know that a lot of the information and research is a trickle down from cannabis, because there's enough money to be spent there where if you really do get a nugget of information, you can pass it down into vegetables and everything else. But all the information has been scientific based using a lab and then duplicating that work over and over against real world results, not just on a white paper. And so even today I mixed up 6 samples at varying percentages in a spreadsheet and we sent them to the lab. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to read these things. You know, really it's very simple stuff. It just took a decade of sifting through it because there was no real school that would give you that fast path approach. So
sure. So it seems like a bit of curiosity kind of led you to potentially starting it. Yep. But
I guess... and then fear of not being able to change the recipe because it was this magic gift we were given, right? What if one ingredient changes or something? How do we actually duplicate it? Like, I don't want to just get lucky and have like knock some guy out with one lucky punch. I want to know that if I get something happens, I have a duplicatable system.
Right.
And that's how my brain works. And so it's good for business, but when it comes to soil, it can't be all over the place too.
Let's talk about organics. Basically, you're an organics guy. The whole idea behind Build a Soil is basically organics and no-till. And for the people who don't know, can you explain what no-till is and a little further what living soil is? And that's sort of what I call your bread and butter, your specialty. But I would say most of the pros in the business, you know, go to Jeremy for everything. And you've built Build a Soil out of a garage into being the go-to guy when it comes to no-till soil and the ingredients, supplements, everything you need to cook up your dirt. But you're the expert, so I'll shut up and let you talk. Explain what is no-till and what is living soil?
Let's do it. Two big keywords there that I think have a lot of confusion surrounding them. And I think what helps give people a window into what we're doing at Build a Soil is knowing that many people that grow indoors for cannabis or grow in raised beds in a greenhouse for their food, they're mimicking the best practice from outdoor permaculture, natural organic methods, and they're trying to apply them to a system. And when I first started growing, it was like, you do not use compost indoors. You do not use any of your plant material. It can have disease. Take it away. And it made sense because if you're in California and someone else is in New York, you could say, what's your EC? What's your PPM? What's this? Okay, cool. We're now the same and we can talk about it. Organics was confusing because none of those baselines were constant. And so when we started looking at no-till, it's a farming term and it literally means they don't till. And most farmers would say, well, that you can't grow that way. Your soil is going to get hard. And so then we started wondering, well, how does it work? Well, nobody goes and tills the forest, then it's growing pretty big, but it's also not disturbed. So all those leaves that fall, they stay there. And they decompose and turn into soil. And fungus comes along and breaks it down and it builds the soil up in this nutritive layer. Very similarly, we were growing indoors and we were recycling soil, kind of tilling. And so when people found a good recipe, they were growing oftentimes in like 5 gallons, 7 gallons. Done with the harvest, they would dump all that soil back onto a tarp. And they started calling it recycling soil instead of throwing it away. Cause a lot of us would finish around. You'd have to like drive your truck somewhere and be dumping soil in a dumpster. Like, how do I get rid of this shit? Cause it's illegal to grow. And so we thought, well, let's keep it. Well, a lot of times you'd have bad yield or you would have a problem if you just kept your soil. So we'd dump it and we'd add what was a guess, like half of the nutrients we started with back in or something. And you'd start to learn from there and it worked. But on the grow forums at ICMAG, there was a thread that came out where Gasganistan and Tim Wilson, Microbe Man, and you had Clackamas Coots and all these people that were like, why do we do this? And would come up with reasons, right? And so nature would use cover crop to till the soil, worms to till the soil. And so it wasn't just saying we're not tilling because that wouldn't work, but we had to bring the soil to the point where it didn't need it and it was improved. And so now you can look at, if you go to like the Rodale Institute, you can see where they do conventional trials, organic trials, and then no-till trials. And they demonstrate the results year after year after year. And you can see that over a longer period of time when there's weather, drought, fertilizer issues, the no-till organic does better throughout all of those stresses and challenges. And so when we started looking, now we've talked no-till outdoors, you can research, it's an entire philosophy of farming that's better for the earth and can be more cost effective when it's managed properly. Well, we wanted to put that in indoors, but in a 5 gallon pot, we have to recycle it. Eventually, some of the guys, you know, Blue Jay Way back in the day, now it's Mountain Organics, and some of the others were using teas instead of recycling, and they would just leave the soil right there and that's it, and just plant right back into it. Well, eventually people started getting good enough results where we thought maybe we can no-till indoors. And so the terminology, for lack of a better word, we were trying to describe like not potting soil like from the bag, but like soil with the rock dust, with the biochar, the compost, all the stuff you read on organic farms, if that's in the soil, isn't it like alive? Isn't it a living soil at that point? And so people started calling it that. And now to this day, we have people saying, well, is my soil dead? How do I know if it's alive? We didn't mean to create that confusion. We were just trying to say that a living soil is a simpler term than saying rock dust, biochar, compost at heavy amounts and focused on biology. So the difference there is when you have life in the soil, you have these slow release organic materials like seed meal, crustacean meal, oyster shell flour. Well, those aren't, they can't, like the plant can't eat that. The plant doesn't have teeth. So we require this life in the soil, the living component of the soil, to be the biology that eats that stuff and turns it into plant available nutrition. And so the proponent of hydroponics would say, organic is bullshit because organics starts off this way. Microbes and life break it down to remove the carbon and make chemicals that are now available to the plant. It's chemicals. But the important distinction to me was that the soil was in charge of that chemical process. I didn't have to be a chemist. And as long as it was in somewhat balance and the life was enough, it would work in relationship with the plant to get its nutrition. And that created a little bit of a rift because a lot of times as a hydro grower, you're like, well, I'm in charge of this. I'm the reason why the crop did so well. And we found that a lot of living soil growers are like, the soil is the reason it did so well. I just was in charge of that. So that seems to be like a difference of mentality, but without going hours longer on the subject, that's in a nutshell why
we. That was a perfect explanation, I think. Yeah, absolutely perfect. And I will kind of concur with that because I've always thought in my younger days, like, hey, organic soil flour is absolutely the best. It's the best way to go. But I couldn't tell you exactly what was happening in that soil. I just knew, mix this up, and if you follow this recipe, it comes out fire. But this is like taking it a step further and starting to investigate using the lab and starting to figure out why, what is in this organic soils that is making this shit dank. But I guess what's my question and my follow-up question would be is, how does it taste? You know, we know organic flavored, you know, cannabis is like supreme, but then you started getting into the no-till or the living soil and it's like, is the taste still the same when you're not, you know, because you're not necessarily flushing everything out like we would do in a garden where it's like, all right, we want to flush this out where it's totally clear and we're flushing everything, all the nutrient value out that we can completely harvest it and then go forward. Whereas this living soil, we continue to reuse it. So how does the taste translate?
There's some nuances there that I won't pretend to understand. I do notice when we're using living soil, I feel like as you keep it around for a while, it becomes where most of the nutrients are in the top layer and it's not quite as much down below where your first cycle it's loaded. And that eventually creates that result where it can have that good taste and it can have all the organics as well because they're in different zones. But I also feel like if you load up a whole bunch of soil and grow a very small plant that doesn't go through a lot of that, it can affect the quality of the smoke. And I don't know exactly what that is, meaning there's a lot of information out there, but there's a lot of other information that will disagree with that. And meaning white ash, total combustion, moisture content. When you're looking at tobacco, we're looking at a leaf, not a flower. So you're looking at nitrogen content, potassium, calcium, there's all these things, right? I don't think we would send off one nug versus another and see a very big difference on a tissue test. But what I will say is that when we're growing in the organic way, when you start to get your cycle where you're watering properly and the plants are actually finishing, I would say a lot of times, because you have the ability in hydro to flush, you don't wait for that. You usually predict, you say, this genetic in my experience should finish in the next few weeks, so I'm going to start flushing. Mm-hmm. Which means that typically, whether it could have gone a week longer or not, you're gonna finish the plant.
Yeah, force it.
Where in organics, if you're thinking this should be an 8-weeker, you might find that's an 11-weeker and it takes that long to fade. And having more nutrients might push it that way a little bit. But I feel like because people rush things or because they're not as familiar with living soil really showing what the genetics want to do, like some will just keep going. And I've also noticed some genetics can be in more of an abundant nutrient and they just finish faster. Like maybe the sativa one, maybe the more equatorial are like used to regenerating growth based on the hours in the day and they can go through a re-veg. But for whatever it is, the quality seems to be related more to the genetics, which I know you know. And when I see hydro, I see an increase in taste when they're adding some of the organicness to the hydro. But when it comes to living soil, overshooting the nutrient loading and not finishing the plant is what I think leads to something that's lackluster when you're expecting it to be the best. But as long as I let the plant finish, whether or not there's nutrients still in the soil, it senesces and it starts to immobilize the nutrient and move the nutrients and finish, we get really good taste and results. And obviously that's individual, but I think from smoking enough with a lot of people, the genetics has to have that terpene profile. You're not going to just grow organic and add 5% terps to a plant that doesn't produce it.
Sure.
But when the possibility's there, I feel like it's easier to grow terpy weed across the board than not. And if you're brand new, if you grab like an earth box and some soil, you're going to have great flavor. But your first hydro run, it might be harder to do that. Since, you know, fast forward, it's been a decade. I've found some hydro growers that crush it and they can definitely produce a good quality. But I feel like for most of our customers, 24/7, 365, day in and day out, taking vacations, having a job, the organic way leads to constant flavors, constant without any issue. Being good at hydro, I think, is a little bit different. And the next part is it fits my lifestyle. Like I eat organic chicken. I care that it's not Roundup sprayed corn being fed to them that ruins the earth. So there's these ancillary things, but straight up just organic versus hydro, I think that across the board, without as much expertise, you can get the terpene percentage higher. And to me, that leads to the entourage and the flavor that I'm looking for.
Yeah, couldn't have said it better myself. I agree 1,000%. I want to shift gears a little bit. I feel like we could talk no-till for quite a while, but yeah, I want to shift to your YouTube channel. Congratulations. You guys just crossed over the 100,000 subscriber threshold, which is huge. I know how hard YouTube is, and you guys are crushing it. But you have an awesome series on there. So I want to invite everybody from this channel to go check out Jeremy's Build the Soil YouTube channel. The link has been on the screen the entire time, but go check it out. He's about to launch what I guess you call season four now, where you have everything on there from, you know, how to start seeds, how to trim, how to transplant, how to grow, just very good detailed, tutorials. Like I say, better than I could do myself. I thought about trying to do something like that, but you're doing it way better than I ever could. So I was just like, let the man crush. But I wanted to kind of ask you, because the last round and kind of the reason that we started really paying attention was you did our good buddy Daz and partner of the Dark Owl that we have done too, but did our good buddy Daz's autos. And I wanted to ask your opinion on autos, because before I met Daz, I thought autos are Ruderow's bullshit, a waste of time, you know, 12-inch windowsill shit for Europe. Like, who really cares about that low THC? But over the course of probably the last decade, autos have transformed into something where they're almost unrecognizable from photo plants. And my opinion has completely changed to the point that, you know, Daz and I have now worked on a couple of projects. But you just ran the, I think it was Strawberry Milk and Cookies, and people were going bananas over it. And I think you're partially responsible for breaking our website, because people loved the views and the channel, and then they came over and tried to snag it and broke the fucking website. But yeah, I don't know. I just kind of wanted to say, give us your opinions on autos versus photos and in general, and maybe some other great strains that you've come across as you've been growing and doing your YouTube channel.
Okay, I can do it. So a couple of things before I jump in. On the YouTube, all the content that we share is like what we found from friends to work. I think a lot of what you find on Google is just regurgitation of some facts, like, oh, you can't do it this way, you must trim that way. We just found what works. And every homie I asked usually has the same answer. And I found most of us don't trim our herb perfect. And most of, like, it's just a thing that when you do a daily growing. So I'm just trying to share that info. And when it came to autos, for a long time, there's been financial opportunity to jump into maybe some of the auto flower stuff, but I stayed away because my business mentality is I only do what I know. And then I'm not blowing smoke. And it's important that I can relay those little details that someone's gonna experience. Cause as they go through it, they realize, oh, okay, he has been here before. This is adding up. And I had enough people saying, look, you gotta run autos. And I had, I think Mr. Autoflower, some other people reached out on Instagram, was like, dude, Daz is the man. Look at these photos, I'm telling you, you have to try. And I thought, okay, worst case scenario, I get to laugh at how shitty autoflowers are still. And if someone's really willing to step up and let me try that, I'll do it. But I mean, they'd have to believe in their product and we'll see. So I got a lot of recommendations from like Mephisto, Daz, a couple others that were kind of at the top of people's list. And Daz immediately got back and had a huge energy and we vibed. And then I was able to realize we talked in the past and we, like, there was already some synergy and we just never really picked the ball up and ran with it. Sometimes that happens in life. You meet people and then it's not ready. It's not time yet. And so you don't know this before I jump into your question, but we've already decided to run the next run of Autoflower because it went so well. And that probably should help answer your question. We love the Autoflower. I'll get there. But it surprised me. It surprised me so much that because Daz was the one that stepped up and said, hey, you run my gear. I promise you'll be happy. And I fully told him, if I don't like it, I'm going to tell you on YouTube and tell everybody. I don't think it's strong or whatever. And I was kind of holding out final judgment to make sure the strength was still there when I smoked it by itself. And I'm happy to report that it's potent, it's fire, it tastes good. I fucking love the strawberry milk and cookies. I still wish I could keep a clone of one profile that I really like, but I think Daz did a good enough job where I'm confident I could buy another pack and duplicate the experience. But what you don't know is that I didn't know you guys worked together. And so I'm telling Daz, hey, you brought me, like, we went to the dance together and I'm staying with you. I'm not going to switch to some other breeder now, even though that's probably good too, right? Share different breeders. And then I asked him to ask his audience what they want us to run. Well, and then you're reaching out and I see all these people coming from Dark Horse to the YouTube video. I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And so then it was decided that we're going to run the Marathon OG. And then I found out that that's a partial project that you guys worked on together. And so now I'm on your show right now doing the Dark Horse show. And yesterday we decided to run the Dark Horse Daz combo Night Owl. So I'm pretty stoked about this whole thing.
Yeah, beautiful. Just I just got to jump into full disclosure, just to be totally clear. Like Daz and I don't work on anything that Daz does. Daz is the man. Daz has been doing autos long before I have, but we did a collaborative effort to release some Bruce Banner and some Marathons under a Dark Owl brand where we collabed our names even and put them out. And I just kind of heard actually this morning that we're going to get you some of the Marathons and you're going to watch you do them on season 4. And I'm stoked to see what you can do with the Marathons in the beds. And that's very, very exciting. I think we obviously, to answer my own question, we made a believer out of you with autos, or Daz made a believer out of you with his autos?
Yeah, to the point where like there's politics involved in this in the sense that there's multiple different seeds that I run. I try not to like, oh, I love this and just say it because I say it and all of a sudden people are buying it. I feel like there's a responsibility in being honest. And I've gone back to those Autoflower jars for whatever reason a lot. I feel like it's been one of my go-tos. I liked a lot of the other genetics for a number of reasons, and I always will appreciate the variety. But even in the YouTube, he doesn't talk about this. The 4x4, it was like an extra tent that we wanted to run under 18 hours, and I screwed it up, had some bud rot. I cleared it all out, and what was left over was actually more yield than I anticipated and of better quality than I anticipated. And the terps that were coming out of those particular seeds were so strawberry. Like I didn't expect strawberry, like to be recognizable within there. I know sometimes you put the word in your head and it plants seed, you taste certain things, but there is a strawberry and I get like a cheesy, funky, not fuel, but like it is amazing. So I keep going back to that. In fact, I have some at my desk here, like the bottoms of it and I love it. So it took a while for me to just come to that conclusion. The whole time it was growing, I was thinking this is definitely prettier than I thought. But the second cycle for us to do season 4, we're going to run autos for the second time. We're going to run the Marathon OG and we're hoping to put 2 cycles in. Main reason is I've got, my wife's going to have a hip surgery in a few weeks. I always want to be growing. So I'm going to start some seeds now. During when that's happening, that will allow us to get ramped up enough to naturally sex them all, separate them all. But because we're going to have that long before I go to flower again, because we're going to pop more seed packs, I thought let's fire off another round of autos and we'll harvest before we even start the next round. So we're going to try and get 2 batches of Marathon in. One, we're going to start when we pop all the seeds that need sexing and we'll be in 1 gallons and we'll be like 8 weeks out. We're going to use that 8 weeks to fire off a full auto run in one quadrant of the 10x10 while we're doing seeds under 18 hours of light. And I think it's going to show people that are like, fuck autos. But now they're wondering, man, he said it tastes good and it's potent. Maybe I get an extra round in of some new flavors while I'm prepping the garden in other areas. I also know a lot of people that want to throw them outdoor and just get an extra harvest in while they're building their regular outdoor garden. So now that my mind thinks they're quality, I'm seeing many other opportunities to use it as a tool to my disposal instead of being something that I'm either an auto guy or I'm not. I think I'm always going to be a photo period guy. I like keeping moms. I like having the clone of what I like, but I definitely see a place for auto flowers. And as more people reach out to me that are like from parents, grandparents, like family, instead of someone who might be like excited to get a grow light. Some people don't, they just want weed. I could see them running an earth box and an auto flower outdoors and getting a really good harvest without having to be like knowing the whole process. It's pretty cool.
Kind of definitely the future of cannabis growing, just at least starting people on cannabis growing, when you can literally give them a kit and be like, yeah, start, take these seeds and do that. But I guess I am curious, what is in your mom room, or what are some of your favorite strains, even photos or whatever stuff you've come across? You know, it doesn't have to all be about autos on this. It's like, what is some of your favorite photos that you have, or what's in your mom room? I'm kind of curious.
I can tell you what I have right now. I do rotate. I get kind of bored of stuff occasionally. We give it to friends and it's usually around. But because I have so many seeds and kind of a seed problem, I'm always just looking for something that I keep around for another year and then decide if I'm going to keep it or not. And so right now I've got a mom room that's here at the office, and that's just everything from the last round. So I've got the Beefcake D, I've got some Pacalolo 1, and I've got some males that we're going to be using in breeding next time just to show people how to collect pollen and have some fun. At home, I've got 3 moms right now. Normally I have a little bit more than that, but I kind of pared it back just to stuff that I'm liking because I want to start popping more seeds. So right now I've got a Chem 91. I've got a Halitosis number 8 from the, I think, from the second and third season, or first and second, I forget. And that's from Covert Genetics. It's got the Chem D95, and I really lean towards those Chem D ones. I just love it. And then I've also got the Marshmallow OG from Compound, the number 13 that we selected by way of Joe Canapu, the Tord there. And that, he dropped off a seed pack. We popped them, ran 13 from seed. One of them stood out. I'm pretty sure when you see it out there, that's the cut. He ended up giving it to somebody else or sent it to him. And now I see him like for sale with that same number 13 on it for like $500 a cut or something stupid.
I'm sure it's the same
cut. And I've had it forever because I really like it. But I just need to have something that has a lot of fuel in it in my mom's stable. Other than that, I like popping lots of seeds all the time.
Sure. Always something new. I wanted to ask you about, you're doing some cool shit with like Duke, I think, and J Plant Speaker. You kind of do some product lines with certain folks. You want to speak on what you're doing there and how that's sort of working?
Yeah, it's been anything that naturally evolves, like where there's some synergy and we start to create a relationship. Duke reached out. We had started off talking to him at the, I think it was Indo Expo in Denver before that kind of went away. But during that time, Kevin from Rootwise was talking to Duke a lot, talking to Tommy, and just running ideas by each other. And we were kind of like, it was going to be a potential opportunity for us to kind of wrap that synergy together. He was always into living soil or like organics, and that was his style. Totally. And so that kind of fit the mold. And he had a following of people that really believed in him. Like, he had the vibe, you know, and that's what I look for. And so fast forward, everybody knows he had some issues with the law, firearms, a few little things, decided to just turn himself in, handle his shit like a man, and then come back out on the other side of it better. Well, the last few months he started writing me, and I actually got the letter right here just because I felt like it meant something at the time, but still does, and I keep it, but I got his letter right here. And he just started sharing with me his vision. I'm drawn to people like that, that have a vision they want to see. And it was in line with what I thought. So we should have released the soil like the day he got out, but I don't do things like that. I sent it to the lab. We really slow walk it, finally made like 10 different versions of it, and finally got one I actually can believe in. And I sent it to him. And the reason why it took so long is I don't do a lot of things that normal, like I don't do blood meals and certain things that we could talk about for days why I don't, but most of them are just regurgitated waste from the GMO corn and soy industry fed through animals. And so we stay away from a lot of it. So I had to work with Duke about making sure that this recipe would still work and changing a few things. So we'll be discussing that, but we're not talking about it because I sent him the soil and I said, you have to grow in it before any of us talk about any of it. And that's so that's what he's put it. Yeah. And he's put it to the test, and it will become a thing. Whether we have to tinker with it a little more or not is yet to be decided, but he will tell me when we're getting closer to getting ready. And that wasn't really a business thing as it was a desire to just work together and see what happens. We haven't even laid out how we're going to make money off of it. We just started with the idea and then we'll get there. Same thing with J Plant Speaker. So he was messing around with Q-Yaha extract and so was I, and we were talking about it, and it was weird how we got to the same place. when we have different backgrounds. And he was always documenting his Instagram so well that I had tons of people that would ask him a question. And he would noticeably get on there and answer their question for him. And so to me, linking arms with him meant that we were giving more free education away for people that wanted to follow that style. Mm-hmm. And if you know how to grow a greenhouse or outdoor, like everybody has their own style because you're literally your area is different. Like the way Jay grows is based on his weather, the type of greenhouse he has to run. It's very different than how Rootwise would run his greenhouse in this environment.
Sure.
And if you don't know that, you might think one's doing better than the other. They're just different and they're based on necessity. So when Jay started, we started talking, how would we work together? And I mentioned, man, I love your, like your whole thing you've got going. It'd be fun to have a product that we could share that made a difference. And we were both using Kyuyaha a lot. And we found a supplier and I gave him some samples that was over 65% saponin. It was like medical quality in comparison to what else we were finding on the market. And behind the scenes, we were reading a lot of white papers saying that saponin is not only a plant growth promotant, but it's also a potential pesticide. And we couldn't label it like that. We can't discuss it. And I don't at all. Right. But knowing the white paper science behind it, this is something really special. And we found the cleanest, purest form that's the highest potency. We decided to run with it. So I released the product without having his label, just under the name Saponaria, and people were using it. But once we put that pretty label and once Jay started using it, it kind of became a joke. Like people were making foam parties because of how foam it was. And like, that's not really how you're supposed to use it. But because it had that visual, I swear it was like a TikTok reel or something. It just took off and it does so much. It's insane how much business it does. It really was a game changer. And so what I'm realizing is that every time we link up with somebody, instead of trying to own this all ourselves, create that synergy where we're both vibing off of it and have fun, everybody just blows up and we have way more success together. Like the difference between selling it under the name Saponaria versus the J Plant Speaker,
totally,
it's 1,000 times bigger because you have more people that care about it now instead of just me saying it's good. So I hope that that's part of Build a Soil's model forever. Even this whole DAS thing, like I'm now thinking, God, we got to have an autoflower soil of some sort. Because
exactly what I was going to say.
Fast, the normal living soil has slow release in it that may not get used. And then we don't want to affect the end quality. So I just sent off six, the recipe that I sent today, Daz doesn't, I'm kind of mentioning it to him, but I sent off six versions of something that I'm hoping will evolve into a very, very duplicatable, fast release product that will be balanced and fit that living soil for autoflower. But it doesn't need to be just for autoflowers. I have other reasons for tinkering like I always do. But this is how it all starts. It's like, a friend has a question. We start talking about it. It gets more passionate. And then I just go off the deep end trying ideas. And some of it works, some of it doesn't.
I mean, I would say, looking back on it, Build a Soil has been an incredible success story. I don't know anything about the way the business is run or how what you've done. But just watching from Instagram, it's like you started in a garage. Then you got a bigger yard. Then you got a bigger lot. Now you got a couple buildings. Now you got yards. And it's like, man, you guys have been really fun to watch grow and build into something. And it's literally a Colorado homegrown success story. And I feel like Build a Soil is all over the place. I saw you're on Amazon. Like you have your own Amazon store. You can get all a lot of the Build a Soil stuff on Amazon. I guess I'll show website real quick. I do want to show it. But as I'm showing it, I guess I would be remiss if I didn't ask you for tips or tricks for the audience. Do you have any tips for terps? For yield or general plant health? And I'm just going to kind of generally scan the website, but you just go ahead and shout out anything that you have as a go-to for your secret success for maybe yield, terps, or just general plant health.
A couple things I've noticed that customers relay back to us when they're kind of dipping their toe in the living soil. People that use the Earth Box usually have the best grow they've ever had. As far as all the leaf growth is perfect, there's no nutritional deficiencies. And I attribute that to taking away the only learning curve, and that's learning how to water. And so if somebody uses an Earth Box, they usually get really good results without trying that hard. It's a bottom watering system. On top of that, utilizing our soil recipe is typically what gives people those terpy results without having to like copy a friend's recipe and see if it works. As far as tips go, that would be important. I think genetics are the most important. Good genetics make us look good. It makes everybody else look good. There's no soil in the world that will make bad genetics perform better. And so I think that genetics is most important. And since you provide that, that's obviously going to be a big part of it. And then from there, what I've noticed that's unique about living soil and what I think provides opportunity outside of just growing, but rolls over into other parts of your life, is that to get the best results, all that it requires is showing up daily and having a little bit of discipline. The swings that occur, like in hydro, can be fast and hard, but in living soil, if you just don't over tinker and follow some of these proven basics of the Build a Soil way, if you go to educational, we have a whole list on it, that just being disciplined, showing up, watering appropriately, and not rushing it, you usually get really, really good results. So there's the growing system. Really, most of us just kind of make good soil and try and not add too much to it. But when somebody wants to learn, they're always asking the chef, well, how much exactly do you put in that recipe to make the same soup? So we came up with a little bit of a system. And if you scroll to the very bottom, there's a spreadsheet that goes through a lot of the additives that people will add throughout the life cycle. I don't mention it to everybody because it seems complicated, but I will say the heart of this is up top. It's all the environment. I mean, of course, we have products on there like RootWise that I think makes a big difference because that's the organic biology that makes the nutrients available. But there's biology in compost. I mean, you don't really need anything from Build-A-Soil. One of the things we try and teach is that all of this is doable without Build-A-Soil. You just have to know the fundamental principles. And so if you look at the very top, there is some information in the white area that talks about the photo period, the DLI, the PAR, like all of these things, and the humidity and the temperature. Without getting the humidity, temperature, and the lighting right, and without having the right genetics, soil does not matter. So to me, the part that we bring to the table is teaching people to focus on the weakest link instead of everything all at once. So if you don't have a good grow environment, that's your weakest link. Let's fix that. Once the environment's dialed in as good as possible, genetics are going to be superior. Once you know you've got some pretty good genetics and your environment's dialed, now when we make a change in the soil or an additive, we should see the differences and be able to educate ourselves.
Welcome to the Build a Soil YouTube series.
Sorry.
Yep, and there's our YouTube channel. And so we have it broken down by season. We do have some FAQ questions, but now it's been three seasons. And in each season, we try and demonstrate more than one growing style. So essentially, it's like having 12 seasons in three. There's four quadrants of our grow tent that we're always demonstrating. Part of the reason that I do that is I want to show that even while running a business with 60 employees and a lot going on, we can grow four different ways live, in the sense that each video, it's not 6 months ago we recorded it. It's right when it happens. So we have the opportunity to fail in front of everybody. And I think showing that, hey, we're just like you. If we fail, we don't get to smoke it. But for us, it's embarrassing on YouTube. The home grower has just as much on the line. Maybe they convinced their wife. Maybe they borrowed from their own paycheck from the hydro shop. They said, hey, hydro shop, promise, give me a light. I'll pay you in 3 months. That shit happens and you have to get to harvest. And so the scariest part for me starting Build a Soil was that we might be a problem. Like I sell them an amendment and they blame it on us. So to back that up, we had to provide the education so I could feel confident saying, as long as they know what they're doing, it shouldn't be my fault that they have a failure. So I think that's really the secret.
I kind of dominated this interview, Cease. Did you have anything that you wanted to ask?
It's pretty much more about the Q stuff. You said it was used as a pesticide as well. But what are the main applications for Q besides the pesticide uses?
So typically, I don't think it's that special, in the sense that, believe me, I feel like the Q is a special product because it's done well for us. But really what I'm after, if I was to be just to the rudimentary, is a lot of our soil mixes are based on peat moss and compost and all these other things, that the moisture content, when you're in the right window there, if there's too much water, it'll oversaturate the plants. And if there's too little, you're not going to get nutrients. So what we do is we build a soil recipe that's less likely to be overwatered all the time. But then we use the Q to make sure that it doesn't go dry and that it stays even to even wall to wall moist. And so when we put the mulch layer, like the little straw on top, it kind of caps the soil. And when we use the Q, it spreads the moisture. That keeps the biology active. And I also feel like because it's soapy, it's kind of slippery, it allows pathways for the biology and the fungus to slip around in the soil. When you start going down the rabbit hole of researching the white papers, there are plant growth promoting qualities saying that it promotes plant growth, kind of like a plant steroid of some sort. There's over 120 different types of chemical structures of saponin. It's not just saponin. So the saponin from alfalfa might be different from the saponin from Q. While they have similar ones in there, the Q-Ya has a lot of the varieties of saponin in it. And we were previously, and we still do, offer a yucca extract for the saponin. So saponin is what we're really after. But the yucca extract brings with it sugars, and it's a little bit stickier. And so the reason I think people really gravitated towards the Q is when you're making foliar sprays or anything that's going to go on the plant, you're getting the purest form possible in the least amount to make the biggest difference. And one of the cool parts, like running our vegetable farm, we've taken the Build a Soil away and we produce thousands of pounds of produce and sell them at the farmer's market. We wanted to show that this wasn't just some, you know, closet grow technique, and it produces. I mean, it's unbelievable when farmers come see our farm, how well my wife runs that, how beautiful the produce is. And part of her process is to use something gentle to just clean the leaves off and just keep it so it's inhospitable for pests. It doesn't have to be a pesticide. It's just keeping the leaves clean. And the Q works really, really well for that as well. And it's cost effective based on how little you have to use. But for like some of our customers probably use too much. So
do you mix it
with, not that I'm complaining, you know?
Do you mix the Q with other sprays, or do you use it alone?
Yes. So the Q is the number one ingredient to add to other things. I use the Q alone because it's simple enough and it does clean the plants and it does have enough benefit on its own. But if you're trying to break out the big guns, like for instance, one of the methodologies we refer to is called JADAM, organic farming. And JADAM, it's an orange book you can buy. They're trying to open source all the organic tech, and it's an extension of Korean natural farming. When they teach you how to do pest control on your farm, their fundamental basic is to make something called JADAM wetting agent. And it's essentially the most simple liquid soap that you can make. And the idea was, why are we importing all this sugar to do these ferments? Let's just use plant material here in Korea. And so that's what JADAM started to do. But when it came to pesticide, they thought, well, we don't need to buy soap from a soap maker, even though they say it's hard to make. How can we do this so it's open source? And they came up with a really good wetting agent. And to that base wetting agent, they now add over 100 different herbs, depending on the bugs of that year. So maybe this season it's a mite, and maybe the rosemary works really well. They'll boil the rosemary, get the essence out of it, and they'll put that into their JADAM wetting agent. And now that's what they deploy on the farm once a week in their backpack sprayer or however they're going to do it. So on the Build a Soil way, instead of having to go buy the canola oil and the lye and all the stuff that makes soap, like there's chemicals to make soap, it works well and it's cost effective. But the Kyuyaha is like the most natural version of that. It's a wetting agent, but I don't need the oil and the lye, and I don't have to make it. I just buy it. And at that point, now I have the base. So now I can add in whatever you like. So whether you like essential oils or neem oil, or whether you just want to add in some biology or add anything else. Some people use Agsil potassium silicate, and they'll use that as kind of a pesticide. You can use it with the Q, and it'll help spread it even across the leaf and make sure that you get that actual control. Most of the time in organics, if you do a spray for pests or a spray for foliar, the limiting factor is going to be you don't hit everywhere on the plant. And so these wetting agents will really help change the game on your efficacy from a foliar spray.
I think we probably just dipped our pinky toe in the water of no-till in like the surface of what Jeremy could teach us and what you can learn. But I think we're towards the end of the program here, and I'll give you an opportunity to kind of shout out anything that maybe we missed or you wanted to talk about. But yeah, I would just really implore people to go check out Jeremy's YouTube channel and Build a Soil's YouTube channel. And I would even say this much, that, you know, these guys have been around for so long, Colorado staple, that you might hate me for saying this, Jeremy, but it's like, if you call them up, they'll talk to you just like this on the phone and explain the products to you and how you use it. And it's like, they're very good with their customer service. They'll literally email you back. Like, so yeah, if us just putting our pinky toe in this has got you intrigued, I guess I'll throw it back to you with where would be the best place to go if people are curious about getting into no-till, learning more about no-till, and trying to grow a crop this way.
Awesome. I would say link up with your friends that already grow this way. A lot of times that's how we find out. And you'll notice that Build a Soil really follows the same path. We're not trying to reinvent any of this. We're just sharing what's worked for all of us. And so the YouTube is usually the best place to go to learn. That's going to be more of a directional sign. I'm not trying to teach everything. If there's something that we mention in there, it'll be a great place for you to lurch, a great place for you to look. A lot of times life is not about having the right answer. It's about having the right question. There's infinite answers. And so what we want to do is postulate better questions that get us the results that we want. And so when you hear biochar, you might Google it for the first time. When you hear about saponin, this might be the first time you start looking, and it opens up a world to you that is so much bigger than, hey, we have some cheap stuff we can sell to the plant growers and mark up, right? And so hydro's no longer there. People are educated. You know, they have to sell products that provide value. But for a long time, cannabis growers were like, they just sold anything to it because there wasn't really a legal market. People were spraying stuff that was for ornamental plants, severely toxic. And that's what really started a lot of us to want to grow our own. When we were growing up, we're like, it's herb, right? I didn't cut it with anything. It's safe. You start growing and you go, oh shit, this could be really bad. Right. I am surprised there's not more issues with, you know, with cannabis as far as health. But the reason why we created the YouTube was just like you mentioned, we'll talk to you on the phone. We have some customers that'll spend hours on the phone with our staff, and we don't have that many staff. Yeah. So
don't be that guy.
Yeah, well, it's fine, but in order to like not answer their questions and also feel good about it, we started to create the YouTube so that our staff can answer as best their ability and say, hey, look, why don't you check out the YouTube? If you still have questions, come back. And we can at least tell them which episode that information's on. And so it's becoming a tool for us to help. And Build a Soil's main mission is to empower organic-minded growers with the best quality products and pair that with free education. And that's our mission, and we're just going to keep doing it. So.
That was beautiful. That was a beautiful words right there. Like I said, I would encourage everyone to give them a follow on Instagram. Thank you once again, Jeremy, for coming on. It's been really fun to watch the growth of Build the Soil, and you manage the growth very well. So yeah, congratulations on all your success, and I'm sure there'll be more, and I'm sure we'll be begging you to come back and answer some more questions down the line. But once again, I'm really happy and stoked that you were able to come on today.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. And I'm excited to show you what we do with those seeds.
Yeah,
so
the Marathon OG. I can't wait to see what happens in season four with the Marathon OG grow. So
yeah, part of season four, and that's kicking off soon. And I did not think we'd be doing this. I mean, the first time I set up a grow tent in our building here, I thought they were going to come shut us down. We had some local sheriffs come in. And once they told me that they couldn't really get me in trouble, it's been kind of like the gloves are off. So as long as they keep letting us do this, we're going to keep doing it. And I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Cool. Thank you, Jeremy. I appreciate it, man. Thank you. So there's Jeremy. Really cool guy, really smart guy, as you can tell. And I think there's a lot that can be learned from Jeremy. So we'll try to get him back on the show. You say somehow it feels like an hour was too short for a Build a Soil podcast. So we might need a part two or part three even. But we'll see what we can do. Cook up with Jeremy. We're honored that he's going to grow the marathon. I already talked to Daz this morning. We're both super pumped about it. So, yeah, Marathon Season 4 going down over at Build a Soil. Go check it out. But right now, it's the best part of the show. Free shit.
Yeah, caught me taking a dab. Fuck.
This is broken. My sound effect didn't work, and it went to Caesar. So we're redoing that whole thing. Hold on. Cue it up for me. There you go. Let's go back to here. Free shit.
It's free!
Proper. Okay. So, yeah. Free shit. What do we give away this week? How about Symbiote? Said it right this time. Appreciate it.
So you know it's right.
Yeah, that's not even the pack. This is the pack. Symbiote. Symbiote's Dark Horse Genetics 12-pack. How are you going to win this? Simple. Go to send an email on the bottom of your screen, darkhorsegeneticslive@gmail.com, and go to... or just in the subject line, write Build a Soil. What number do you want, C's?
104.
For episode 104. All right, C's, you got a weirdo giveaway? I have announced the winners from last week, too, but we'll see what C's wants to do. Do you have any giveaway? I didn't even ask you.
I do have a giveaway.
Hold on, let me get you. There you go.
All right, let me see. Which one am I going to pull in my bag right now? Oh, that's empty. Cushman's to Spritzer.
Okay, what do they got to do to win?
Let's see.
Caesar's free shit with conditions.
You have a list of people subscribed to the Twitch.
I'm sure I could figure it out, but not like immediately.
That's fine. It's not immediate for the past 2 weeks.
You just want to do a Twitch win or Twitch sub?
Yeah, random Twitch sub. If you sub to Twitch, you have a chance at winning these.
Okay.
There you go.
Interesting. That's this giveaway. Caesar's weird conditional giveaway. We will pick one random person from Twitch.
We got to do things differently here.
And yeah, we'll let you know next week. But well, this was last week's winners. If I can find the button. I can't find the button. Because there isn't a button. I forgot. Hold on.
Oh, got a random sub.
Yeah. All right, so we passed 4,000 subs on YouTube. Congratulations to us. Fucking hey.
We can see one genuine, perfect person.
Even better than applause. Do I have applause? Nope. All I got is...
Oh! Hey! Fuck you!
And one of those.
You stupid, ignorant son of a bitch, dumb bastard!
All my sound effects are...
Jesus Christ, I've met some dumb bastards in my time, but you outdo them all. Get over there!
That's long. They're talking shit, also. All my sound effects are shit-talking. But anyway, last week's winners. We passed 4,000 subs on YouTube, so I made a post, and I said if you repost it, I will pick a winner and announce it on the show. So, Bread by High Life, you won. You reposted this, so congratulations, Bread by High Life. I don't know if I DM'd you or not, but I will. And you won. Not even sure what the pack was, but we'll work it out with you. I think I... It was Solomon Grundy. You won Solomon Grundy, Bread by High Life. Also, last week... it was the email last week, email contest was MI Cup Networking, Michigan Cup Networking, I assume, MI Cup Networking, Blue Microverse F5, you won from Night Owl Seeds, congratulations, and C's conditional weirdo giveaway was you had to be a member of C-Bazaar Premium, and the member of C-Bazaar Premium, we'll do initials, is AC, and, it's a THC or freebie. Do you know what it was going to be?
It's probably the same thing as the Sweet Cushman Spritzer.
There you go. We'll send you an email. So someone on premiums get an email just out of the blue. Look for it. Hopefully you see it. But yeah, congratulations, all the winners. Like I said, the last show or two, I'm a little bit behind, but I'll get all caught up and make sure everyone gets all their free shit. But with that said, we're at the end of this. We've already run long a little bit, but you got anything before we get the fuck out of here?
I just dropped the link to Twitch. If you want to sub, we're going to pick somebody randomly from the end of this show to... We got till the end of the show to next week. So if you want to be a sub, now's your chance.
Also, I just did a pre-order for a Hypebeast Dark Horse t-shirt. It's been featured on the show once before when I wore it and teased it. But yeah, we're going to have a Supreme-style Dark Horse t-shirt. It's on the C-Bazaar. And the deal with it is it comes with a unreleased fem pack, and there's going to be a link to a special secret hidden podcast that you'll be able to enjoy. So, yeah.
People were asking, what's the free seed?
Can't say yet. It's all going to be a mystery, but it's going to be some Hype Beast fem seeds. The whole thing's Hype Beast, okay? It's the Hype Beast bundle, Hype Beast package. It's a $120 t-shirt, but it's not just a t-shirt. There's extra special stuff there, like fem seeds, maybe a sticker, maybe a link to a super secret hidden podcast, and maybe some extra special shit. But only the first 100 people get the all the good shit, and then I'll just probably release the t-shirt for a regular price. But this is a super hype beast bundle. You want to get on it, $120, I think, on C-Bazaar, and cheaper on premium. So, yeah, I think it's like $109 or something on premium, so if you got premium... You instantly get the savings right back. Anyway, let's get the fuck out of here. Thank you, Jeremy, from Build the Soil. I appreciate it for coming on and giving us the time. And yeah, enjoy the Soulful Sounds, a Stone Ninja. Same bat time, same bat channel next week. Peace, everybody.
Little pirate gay fish, come sit on my shoulder today. Little gay pirate fish, sit on my shoulder today and make me a fried shrimpy dish with some soy sauce, baby.
As the beat drops,
super, super fried, super fried egg roll, triple fried fried rice, triple fried rice, baby. 2-for-1 egg roll, super triple fried rice, triple fried rice, baby. Don't forget the soy sauce. Cha cha cha.
There's my gay fish song, dudes. What?